I ask that now that you'd give your careful and your prayerful attention to our brother Don McIndoo.
Thank you, Don.
Good morning to you each. I'm glad to see that some who have been infirm are back amongst us now. We still have some of our members that are sick. We need to keep our people in their prayers. Our needs are always present. We never know. I feel it's a marvelous opportunity we have each morning to begin our day with prayer. One never knows the things that are going to pass in any particular day. The only way we can be prepared is to come to the Lord in prayer. Our beautiful month of April is about to come to a close. It's been a beautiful spring. Very unusual weather for Phoenix. We're all enjoying it. I hope our guests can even appreciate how moderate and wonderful it is. I've chosen for a text and a lesson. Another springtime occasion in the Scriptures. When the Lord Jesus Christ was met together with a group of His friends and loved ones, companions in the gospel, and those who were searching after Him. I'm going to revolve almost all of my remarks probably around this story, but take it from several sources. In the Scripture, from Matthew and from Mark and from John. I'm going to begin in the 26th chapter of St. Matthew. As we read about this occasion in the Master's life one springtime, about this time of year. Chapter 26, verse 1. We read these words, and it came to pass, when Jesus had finished all these sayings. Well, let's just pause there for a moment and remember where we are in terms of the sayings that He had been sharing with His disciples. He had been talking to them, and we read His comments in chapters 24 and 25 of St. Matthew. He'd been talking to them about the time of His return because they had questioned Him about it. He'd been talking to them about our day, basically, and about the need that every person had to be prepared for the events that were coming. Our need to be watchful. Our need to be careful about the things that are around us and the things that we participate in, the things that make up our lives. We need to be careful. Jesus said over and over again, watch. Take care. Be careful. Be alert to the things that are around you, the dangers that are around you primarily, and to be prayerful. So as He had finished all these sayings, now we change our course here. He said unto His disciples, ye know that after 2 days, or in other words, in 2 days more, is the feast of the Passover, and the Son of Man is betrayed to be crucified. Today is Passover. As our pastor brought to our attention this morning in our Sunday school class, several people asked me about Passover this year because we're not accustomed to it being so far removed from Easter. And certainly there's a very close tie and relationship in the minds of every Christian of Passover and Easter. I'm just going to take a little time as a sidelight here to talk about the Passover and about Easter. First of all, you know, you really can't understand this time variation in our Passover this year and Easter, which was last month. And here we are almost at the end of the month of April without understanding something about the Jewish calendar. The Jewish month contains 28 days, and the Jewish calendar is based on the movements of the moon. It's based on the movements of the moon and the sun that is shining upon the face of the moon that we see. On the last day of every month, every 28 days that came by, all the people in Jerusalem were concerned about the moon. And there were people that were watching the sky all afternoon and into the evening. And on that day, the priests of the temple and several of the elders were waiting in the courtyard of the temple. They were watching as well, but waiting for news. And the first person or people that saw that tiny sliver of moon first appear after it had been gone, the new moon, rushed to the temple to tell the high priest and the elders waiting there that sliver of moon had appeared. And when they had determined and ascertained by a number of different tests that they made, the position in the sky and everything, that it was true, the shofar was blown that everybody in Jerusalem might know we have begun a new month. Well, actually, you know, this is the day of Passover, but our brother Bob put on the board that it was the 15th day of the month of Nisan. And Passover really begins on the 14th day. You know, the Bible doesn't leave us any doubt about it. It says very specifically in Leviticus chapter 23, in the 14th day of the first month at even is the Lord's Passover. Well, this is day 15, but it began yesterday at even time. And when that new moon first appeared was the beginning of the month, and now 14 days later, a full moon, we're celebrating Passover. It is actually, you know, it doesn't begin at any given time, any be given time on your wristwatch. It begins officially when the first three stars are visible after sunset. That might be about 20, 25 minutes after the real sunset. When those first three stars appear, that's when the new day begins. Last night, Passover began when those three stars made their appearance after sunset. And of course, it's still here. The Jewish calendar contains 12 months of these lunar months of 28 days. If you do a little multiplication, that only comes up to 354 days. So we see right away their calendar and our calendar don't match up perfectly. We have a leap year to make up for a little difference in our calendar that's based upon the position of the earth as it rotates around the sun. Theirs is based upon the moon's rotation. And so they have leap years also. And they have a leap year about every other second or third year. In the third year, in the sixth year, in the eighth year, in the 11th year, in the 14th year, the 17th, and the 19th years, they add a special month to make up for. Every 19 years, then, their calendar will come into a cycle again. And I'm kind of thinking our two calendars would be relatively matched up every 19 years when they have these leap years of 11, of a new, a 13th month is placed in there of 11 days. And it kind of jives out easily. So why is Easter different than the Passover? We know that Jesus went up to Jerusalem for the Passover feast. And that's when he was crucified. And 3 days later, on Sunday, he was resurrected. We celebrate that Lord's Day of his resurrection as Easter. But our definition of Easter is it's going to be the first Sunday after the first full moon on or after the vernal equinox, the position of the sun. And so our day of Easter varies somewhat. The day of Passover varies even more. I would like to just show you for a moment, briefly, just a little comparison. Couldn't turn it over because I wrote on the same side. Easter is based on the rotation of the earth around the sun. Passover is based on the position of the moon. So we have two different calendars that are at work here. We take a look at a comparison. This year, 2005, Easter was on Sunday. It's always on Sunday. On Sunday, March 27th, Passover is on Sunday, April 24th. Almost a month difference. In 2004, it was Sunday, April 11th for Easter, and Tuesday, April the 6th was Passover. Passover lasts a week. Matter of fact, the Jewish people have two Passovers. If you happen to have been out of Jerusalem and unable to get to Jerusalem for the Passover feast, there was another opportunity. They had a second Passover where somebody could partake of the Passover feast. 2003, Sunday, April the 20th, and Passover was on Thursday, April the 17th. That's the kind of relationship we like to see and we think about, because that's the kind of biblical relationship about Jesus going up to celebrate the Passover and then his resurrection 3 days later. 2002, Easter on Sunday, March 31st, while a Passover was on Thursday, March the 28th. The day varies for Passover. It's not fixed to a calendar, not fixed to our calendar, not fixed to a particular day of the week like Easter. It relates to the rotation of the moon. It will be the second week after the new moon, the new month of Nisan, 14 days later, will be Passover. I'm going to continue reading here about this particular Passover that we're thinking of here in chapter 26, verse 3. Then assembled together the chief priests and the scribes and the elders of the people under the palace of the high priest, who was called Caiaphas, and consulted that they might take Jesus by subtlety and kill him. You know, here we see, it looks like all of the ecclesiastical heads of the Jewish religion in Jerusalem, at least, gathering themselves together to make a plan, a subtle plan by which they could take this Jesus Christ who had been tormenting them for several years. They were jealous of his popularity among the people. They were upset because when he was teaching, it pointed out some of the lack of spiritual understanding of the Jewish leaders of the day. They'd already, I don't know what kind of subtle plan they're going to make, because they had already tried to trap him. They'd already tried to trick him. They sent their leaders to ask him questions that were leading questions by which they might find him saying something that they could use as an accusation against him. And they were constantly trying to do this. Now they're meeting together once again to find some subtle way by which they could kill him. Verse 5 says, but they said, not on the feast day, lest there be an uproar among the people. On Passover day, people from all over Israel were gathered together in the city of Jerusalem to partake of the Passover, to engage in the festivities of that day. It was a joyous day. We know what the Passover is celebrating. It's celebrating that moment when God led his people out of Egypt and out of bondage and slavery, and they had been prepared for that moment. And the final curse of God was falling upon Egypt. And his people were prepared. And they had smeared the blood of a lamb upon their doorpost. And when that angel of death sent by God passed over the land of Egypt, it passed over these homes that had been properly prepared by people who believed in the words they had received and acted accordingly. Whereas the firstborn of all the Egyptians died during that night. Passover. The Aramaic word, the Hebrew word rather, for Passover. It's kind of strange to just read the strict definitions of it, you know. To jump, to hop, to skip, to look with joy. As God looked with joy down upon this simple home of a slave family in Egypt who had prepared themselves for this very night and believed in his word and had smeared the blood of that lamb on the doorpost. And so when the people gathered together in Jerusalem, it was a joyous occasion. It was a joyous occasion, and they all wanted to come. And so because the city would be filled with people, many of whom had heard of the might and the majesty of this teacher of men, this rabbi who was going about the land of Galilee and Judah, teaching the people and working mighty miracles. The city was going to be filled with them, and so they were a little bit fearful. It says in Luke, when they're reading about this thing, said, for they feared the people. They feared the people because they realized that in the minds and the eyes of many people, this Jesus was special. Someone who perhaps was the Messiah. And when I think of the Passover, and when I was looking in a book written by a Jewish Christian about the Passover, I realize how, I don't know what the right word is, selfish we can be in our beliefs and our understandings. Really and truly, any Christian that would be interested in converting, conversing with and converting Jewish people to Jesus Christ as the Messiah ought to become very familiar with the Passover story. The elements of the Passover feast and the days that, and the parts of the celebration that take place speak over and over and over again of their hope in the coming of the Messiah. And many of the elements of the Passover celebration and the feast point to Jesus Christ. And yet, you know, we give so little attention to it. I'm guilty of that. And it's something that I should correct. I should try to find out more about the significance of those ceremonies and those activities that they take part in, because they look forward to the Messiah. And there are many elements of it that point to Jesus Christ. So I'm going to continue this story by turning over to and finding it in Mark. If I can find Mark, I'm having a hard time with my new Bible. Pages are so thin and so delicate, and my fingers are so insensitive anymore, I can't turn the pages. So I'm going to pick up with verse 3 in chapter 14 of Mark. The same story. Just a few days before Passover, the scribes and the Pharisees are trying to find some subtle way they can catch and kill the master. And now we're going to pick up with this event in which Jesus was participating. Verse 3. And being in Bethany in the house of Simon the leper. Simon the leper. There are a whole lot of Simons in the Bible, in the New Testament. There's Simon Peter. There's Simon the Pharisee. We read about him in chapter 7 of Luke. Another man who invited Jesus to come and his disciples to come to a feast in his home. And something marvelous and miraculous took place there. But he was there to try to trick the master and find occasion to take him to the law. Simon the Pharisee. Now we're reading about the disciple, Simon the Canaanite, which is a poor translation of the word, the Aramaic word that really referred to this disciple called Simon. He really was Simon the Zealot, an activist, so to speak, of that day against the Roman Empire and the Roman government. There's Simon, the father of Judas. But here we're reading about Simon the leper. Now, certainly, you know, it doesn't say a word about it, and it doesn't mention him anywhere else in the Holy Scriptures, but certainly this is a man who had a confrontation with Jesus Christ. A man who had searched him out, not to trick him or not to trap him, but to plead for his need. This couldn't be Simon, a leper, in his home in Bethany, inviting people to come to his home. He would have been killed. He would have been stoned. Lepers had to live apart from the city. They spent their nights in the graveyard. They could only come into the city in the daytime to beg and to plead for alms. And if they saw someone coming, they had to begin shouting, "Unclean, unclean," or they would be stoned to death. So this man, Simon the leper, has to be a man who had met Jesus Christ and been touched by his miraculous power. And his leprosy had been taken away from him. And he'd been cleansed and healed. So here we find Simon the leper. As he sat at meat, there came a woman having an alabaster box of ointment, spikenard, very precious. And she broke the box and poured it on his head. That's all Mark tells us about who was present at this feast. So I'd like to look at a few of the other scriptures. In John chapter 12, we find out that Lazarus was present. Lazarus, the man who had just a few days before been called out of the tomb and had been dead for days. And yet he was resurrected and he came out of the tomb and he returned to Bethany to his home and to his loved ones and to his family. And everybody knew about him. You know, they all knew Simon, Lazarus. They knew he'd been dead, that he died. They knew that he'd been buried in a sepulcher and that he'd come home alive and well, resurrected by the power of this man they called Rabbi. This man, Jesus. In John, I'm going to turn to that. We see something else about who was there. I'm going to read verses, chapter 12 of John. I'm going to read verses 9 through 11. Verse 9 says, much people of the Jews therefore knew that he was there. Lazarus was there. And they came not for Jesus' sake only, but that they might see Lazarus also, whom he had raised from the dead. But the chief priests consulted that they might put Lazarus also to death, because that by reason of him, many of the Jews went away and believed on Jesus. So we see that the snare, the subtlety of the scribes and the Jews and the chief priests, these ecclesiastical leaders of the church, these religious men, we see that in their minds were devious methods of finding ways to put to death people they disapproved of. And this is one of the kinds of things that Jesus kept pointing out to them as they would come to him to try to trick them. He saw through all of their deceptions and all their trickery, and his questions showed them their shortcomings and made them feel badly about themselves. And so we find that Lazarus was there. Oh, I need to read also in John. I need to read. I'm going over there to chapter 12 of John again. See what it says here. There they made him a supper, verse 2. And Martha served. And Lazarus was one of them that sat at the table with him. And so we see here was Simon the leper, who had been healed miraculously by Jesus Christ of a surety. Here was the Lord Jesus. His disciples were there. Martha was there. Certainly there were many people standing maybe inside the house and out in the courtyard and standing around. People who had come to see the Master. People who had come to see Lazarus. Oh, can you imagine the conversations that must have been going around in that room that evening? Or that afternoon, I don't know what time of day it was. Can you imagine the conversation? Wouldn't you have loved to have been there and heard this former leper and Lazarus, who had been dead for several days, and Jesus and his disciples, heard their talk, their discussions, their questions, their answers that the Master would give to them? We know nothing about that conversation, but how glorious it must have been. What a wonderful thing, you know, that a person could sit in and hear such a thing. But there was Martha serving, and it says here in Mark, where we're reading in verse 3, it says, and there was a woman, there came a woman, with an alabaster box of ointment of spikenard, very precious, and she broke the box and poured it on his head. John 12, verse 3 says, then took Mary a pound of ointment. That woman recorded here by Mark was Mary, the sister of Lazarus, the sister of Martha. We've met them before, haven't we? This isn't the first time we've met Martha and Mary. We've read about them before, and I'm sure you all remember the story, but I'm going to go look for it again in Luke chapter 10. Of when Jesus was with Martha and Mary once before, chapter 10 of Luke, over in verse 38. Now it came to pass, as they went, that he entered into a certain village. That village was Bethany also. And a certain woman named Martha received him into her house. And she had a sister called Mary, which also sat at Jesus' feet and heard his word. But Martha was cumbered about much serving and came to him and said, Lord, dost thou not care that my sister hath left me to serve all alone? Bid her, therefore, that she help me. And Jesus answered and said unto her, Martha, Martha, thou art careful and troubled about many things. But one thing is needful, and Mary hath chosen that good part which shall not be taken away from her. So here we find at this great big dinner at Simon the leper's house, when Jesus and all his disciples are there, perhaps other guests, or the home and the courtyard are full of people, there's a whole lot of work to be done. We find Martha busy, serving, hustling about, taking care of that work. Just like she always did, she hadn't changed in the last couple of days since the Lord talked to her before. Maybe it was several months, I don't know. Meanwhile, I just imagine that we've got a lot of Marthas right here in our congregation today. Busy. They see all the things there are to do when we sit down to our meal. And they're busy taking care of all those things that need done. When we have a reunion, they're busy. They see all that needs done and they're hard at work doing it. And aren't we glad? That's a good quality. Aren't we glad? But we want to remember. Martha, remember the words of Jesus. There's another aspect of life too, and it's even more important. And you know, I kind of have a tendency to be like Martha in a lot of respects. You know, I'd rather be mowing the yard or sweeping the floor or painting the building. I'd take that back. Shingling the roof is better than painting the building. Then I would attending to all of the spiritual things that the Lord would want us to give our attention to also. So Martha, we praise the Lord for you. We know you're out there. We see you all the time, you know. But the spiritual things, too, give plenty of attention to them. And meanwhile, where was Mary? You know Mary. Before she was sitting at Jesus' feet, this time Mary is that woman that walked in with the box of ointment that weighed a pound and very precious. And she broke the box and she poured it on his head. In John, the story is a little different. There's a little variation in it. I guess I ought to read it. John chapter 12, it's verse 3 in chapter 12 there also. It says, "Then took Mary a pound of ointment of spikenard, very costly, and anointed the feet of Jesus, and wiped his feet with her hair, and the house was filled with the odor of the ointment." So there's a little difference in the account as given by Mark and the account as we read it in John. Now, John was there at that feast. Mark wasn't. But Mark gained most of his history that he included in his gospel from his close association with the Apostle Peter, who was also at that feast. And so, in my mind, it's quite possible that both these accounts could be correct. That she poured part of that pound of ointment of spikenard on his head and part upon his feet, and cleansed his feet and wiped them with her hair of her head. I recently read a Christian novel. In this Christian novel about Jesus Christ and his ministry, there was a scene that took place in the home of Simon the leper. But I really don't believe it was this Simon. And I don't really know if the Simon the leper that it refers to in that story was he or he was Simon the Pharisee. Because in that account, a sinful woman came into the home of Simon the Pharisee while Jesus was there and anointed his feet with oil and wiped them with her hair and cleansed them with her hair. That's the story in chapter 7 of St. Luke. But I don't think they're the same incident, you know, and I think it would be easy to confuse the two occasions. But the one occasion in Luke took place 2 years before the occasion we're reading about here. And so in my mind, maybe at this occasion, as recorded by Mark and John, maybe Mary did anoint both his head and his feet. There certainly was enough oil, and it would certainly fill the house with fragrance. It said it's very precious. In John, it said it was very costly. And that's obvious, you know, that it would be very precious and costly. Because this ointment, this spikenard, is made of crushing up the leaves of a plant that grows only in the Himalaya Mountains. That blows my mind. That little Israel, sitting there by the Mediterranean Sea, did commerce with the Orient and had an ointment made from a plant that grew in the Himalaya Mountains when Europeans knew nothing about the Himalaya Mountains until the journey of Marco Polo 1,300 years later than this story. Just blows my mind, you know. The advancement since the days of David and Solomon and their navies and their influence in the world, the advancement of this little land of Israel as composed to the ignorance of the lands of our forefathers back in those days is just unimaginable almost. But it was a precious ointment, and she poured out upon him a great amount of it. Well, it caused a little discrepancy there, a little problem there. Verse 4 says, "And there were some at the feast that had indignation within themselves and said, 'Why was this waste of the ointment made? For it might have been sold for more than 300 pence.'" My Bible isn't this way. My study Bible at home is. In your Bible, does that word pence have quotation marks around it? No? Mine does in my study. Because that is a translation of the Aramaic. And it's a poor translation. And it means penny. When in reality, the words that were used, and in the Spanish Bible, it's there correctly, was a denarius, 300 denarius, which would be about a year's salary for an ordinary working person. That's how valuable this was. You know, it's interesting to me. I want to read what John had to say about that again in chapter 12 of John. I'll read it here, verse 4 and 5 and 6 of John. It says, "Then saith one of his disciples..." Mark just said there was murmuring. Then said one of his disciples, Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, which should betray him, "Why was not this ointment sold for 300 pence and given to the poor?" And this he said, says verse 6, "not that he cared for the poor, but because he was a thief and had the money bag, the purse for the group of disciples in Jesus, and bear what was put therein." Well, that's an insight from one of the apostles that was there with him and knew him far better than any of us could imagine, you know. That's his insight into the thinking and the attitude of this Judas Iscariot. So there was this murmuring. I'm going to read now the end of this story for verses 6 through 9. "And Jesus said, 'Let her alone. Let her alone. Why trouble you her? She hath wrought a good work on me. For you have the poor with you always. And whensoever ye will, ye may do them good. But me ye have not always. She hath done what she could. She has come aforehand to anoint my body to the burying. Verily I say unto you, wheresoever this gospel shall be preached throughout the whole earth, this also that she hath done shall be spoken of for a memorial of her. She hath wrought a good work on me. This wasn't this wasn't a thing that many people have had opportunity to do. Oh, I suppose there was lots of opportunity, but not many people took advantage of it. As we read through the New Testament and the Gospels, we don't find many people. We find the earlier story there in Luke of Martha inviting him in to her home for a meal. And certainly there were good women that invited him and his disciples in and gave them a meal. Perhaps there were people who invited them and allowed them to stay for the evening. Many times they spent on the side of the hill, the mountain, in a desert. She hath wrought a good work on me. Kind of a unique occurrence. If any of you ever make a list of all the occurrences that the Gospels tell about where somebody took an opportunity to serve the Lord, let me see it. I'd like to see how big it is. I don't think it's a very extensive list. Most of the people that came to Jesus were there in supplication and with a need that they wanted His help. They wanted His blessing upon them. Are we left? You know, that opportunity is now past. Jesus is at the right hand of His Father in heaven. Are we left with any opportunity to do some personal, loving thing for Jesus, the Master of men, as Mary did? Well, yes, in a sense we are. I'd like to read what Matthew recorded in chapter 25 of Jesus' words. Chapter 25, verse 34. Then shall a king say unto them on his right hand. No, I'm going to begin with verse 31. The judgment time, it's coming soon. That's what we need to be preparing for. When the Son of Man shall come in His glory, and all the holy angels with Him, then shall He sit upon the throne of His glory. And before Him shall He gather all nations, and He shall separate them one from another, as a shepherd divideth his sheep from the goats. And He shall set the sheep on His right hand, but the goats on His left. Then shall the king say unto them on His right hand, Come, ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungered, and you gave me meat. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in, naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came unto me. And then shall the righteous answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee a hungered and fed thee? Or thirsty and gave thee drink? When saw we thee a stranger and took thee in, or naked and clothed thee? Or when saw we sick or in prison and came unto thee? And the king shall answer and say unto them, Verily I say unto you, inasmuch as you have done it unto one of the least of these my brethren, ye have done it unto me. Mary had that unique opportunity. I don't think that now, according to these words, and I believe them sincerely, I don't think the opportunity is excluded from us. And certainly we're surrounded by that opportunity every day of our life. There isn't a day of our life that goes by that that opportunity to serve the Lord doesn't make itself present with us. To comfort someone in need, to feed someone who is hungry, to care for someone who is in great need, to give clothing to someone who is naked, destitute. No, that opportunity is there. If we could be like Mary, take advantage of it. But me, you know, I'm kind of like Martha. I'm busy hurrying around and I don't even see or think about all of these opportunities that surround me every day. To witness for Jesus Christ, to serve Him by serving those about us. As soon as the meal was over, that notable meal, as soon as it was over, Judas slipped off to meet with the high priest and become a traitor and betray his master. The others, certainly their fellowship had been enjoyable. That joyous communion that they'd had one with another, with loved ones, you know, Mary and Martha and Lazarus, many of those who were gathered around, this leper that the Lord had healed. Now it's time to say farewell. And as they all went to their homes, Jesus, together with his disciples, left Bethany. John's the only one that tells this story, what happened after the meal. He left Bethany and began his journey up to Jerusalem to meet the appointment that he had with his destiny. As he has said, you know, the very cause for which he came into this world. To go up and partake of the Passover with his disciples, be betrayed by one, make that great and last sacrifice for sin, and then show us the only religion in all this world, the resurrection, and the hope that we have in that resurrection and an eternal existence with Him, enjoying that kind of fellowship, communion that He had there around that table in Bethany. That's my desire. Someday that we might, all of us, be gathered together in a great communion, a great supper, like that little supper there in Bethany. God bless us to that end.